And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
And a feared. Here on Declare Your Independence, where we're working on every time we moved the bus. We went on a big long trip, and now I don't have audio going out. Oh, I got to restart the. Oh, seriously. All right, we're rebooting. Everybody hold on. Got a great show today. Got Aircrete Harry, Stephen Kinsella, and Frank Tambury. And we're going to have a good time today. We're going to make sure we get taken care of here. Let me make sure I got in the cord. Oh, we should get this stuff done earlier. I say that all the time. All right, hold on. I got you there, Harry?
Yep, I'm here.
There we go. Okay, Donna, make sure we got in the network. Go ahead and count the five for me. Get a level, will you please?
One, two, three.
Boom. All right, we're resuming. Thanks, Harry. I'm so sorry about that. You know, we're really looking forward to this. Just yesterday, a friend and I took the bus down to southeastern Arizona. I mean, out in the middle of nothing. And the Green Dream Project down there, we have geodesic domes that we manufacture and gave him one and for him to play with the earth bags. Now, we've been watching a lot of different build shows and so on, and I've been following Aircrete Harry for a long time, you know. And your progression in the actual formulas for your aircrete. We've watched your domes. We've used Tyvek for different things before. We are familiar with the product. We have been, you know, cutting pie slices and sewing them together to make coverings for our domes and so on, so we understand what you're doing there. We have been playing with concrete and different things and covering the dome. And I want to hear everything, the progression of aircrete. We started playing with papercrete back in the 90s. And then we're going, okay, that's working well. Well, then we had different binders, different things. But then aircrete came along. I want you to explain to us and the audience what aircrete is, why you got so interested in it. And then we're going to talk about structural engineers for you and things that we can do and such. So we're interested. We're here to help. But please share with me in the audience what aircrete is and how you're using it.
Sure. Well, aircrete has been around for a long time in the concrete world. It's been called cellular cement in the commercial industry. And they've been in training air into cement slurries for a long time. So aircrete is basically just a cement slurry, which is a Portland cement. Usually the way it's made is you take one bag of 94-pound bag of Portland cement. You mix it with 6 gallons of water, and then you mix that with a shaving cream-type foam. So most people making aircrete at home are using like a soap like a Dawn or Seven Generations. I got into using a Drexel foaming agent, but any foaming agent you can find, you can make your foam and mix that into your cement slurry. And then depending on how much foam you add, you'll get different densities of aircrete. And this is a big thing a lot of people aren't aware of or don't think of, is that if you have a 55-gallon drum, for example, and you're mixing aircrete, you're mixing your foam into your cement slurry, you don't have to fill that drum with foam. You know, you don't have to expand the cement that far. You can add only 5 or 10 gallons of foam to have a denser cement mix, aircrete mix. So that's basically aircrete. It's just air in your cement slurry, which gives you a lightweight, insulative cement.
Okay, now what are some of the other ingredients? I mean, is there any sand? Is there any gravel? Is there any, you know, binders, plasticizers, you know, fibers? I mean, you know, give me, because you have a certain one you call an Epic, but you don't use it all the time for everything. You know, give us the ingredients and how you alter it when you're doing different stuff. And we'll get into the spraying. I'm definitely interested in the spraying. So, go.
Yeah, so the ingredients usually, see, this is where, as you know, my channel has become popular, is because I've been doing experiments with aircrete for a long time, trying to figure out what was the best formula or the best way to get aircrete strong, to make strong aircrete bricks. And I added a lot of different ingredients. So as an example, usually for a foundation mix, I'll add sand. So I'll usually do a one-to-one. So if I have 94 pounds of cement, I'll add, you know, 100 pounds of sand to that, because they come in 50-pound bags. And so I can add sand to, you can the foam, which will help to give a denser brick for a little more compression strength. But with my experimenting, the other things I've added was calcium chloride, and by adding calcium, which is a cement accelerator, my aircrete was able to cure quicker and get harder faster, because one of the things I've noticed with aircrete is you must give it 4 weeks for it to fully cure. There's a big difference in strength from 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and 4 weeks. And the fourth week is where it really reaches its maximum strength and is a big difference. So as far as ingredients, I really...
Hold on a second. By adding the calcium, does it change any of the other properties other than just make it dry faster?
No, it just helps it to cure quicker, which helps when, you know, you're building and you know, you want to... a firmer brick to be, you want your aircrete brick to be stronger.
So I want to make sure that we talk about your spraying too. When did you go to that?
Well, you know, this whole thing with aircrete started for me, I think it's been like 4 years now, when I've been doing my experiments. And it all started because I wanted to build a house for myself as inexpensively as possible. You know, because back when I started this, I was living in New York. And, you know, when I looked at housing out there, it was just incredible how expensive everything was.
And where was this?
And so this was about 4 years ago when I started getting into aircrete.
No, I mean, where were the housing? What city were you
in? Oh, this was in New York City, in Brooklyn.
Well, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe this week you'd get a discount.
Well, the thing is, for my area, even if I looked at like a 70-mile radius from where I lived in Brooklyn, you know, for housing, it was pretty much in the same range. It was really insane how expensive it is. So that's
now,
why
a
I
lot
ended
of
up...
your friends, I would imagine people are like, you know, they're, you know, I wish I was you. You know, I wish, you know, Eckery Harry's out there in the beautiful Lone Prairie of open and building his dad. Are they coming out with the RVs? They want to be your new best friend now?
You know, that's all part of what I'm doing right now, is I'm coming up with a complete system, trying
complete
to make it...
Complete system. We got to get to the break. We'll be right back. Aircrete Harry. It's going to be a great day. Second.
Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. Me, Ernest Hancock. We got Air Creed Harry is how he's known on his YouTube channel. And he's been doing it for a while. Air Creed Harry, let's see. I think you doing Air Creed before you moved out in the desert and started doing a YouTube channel. I can't remember if you had it before that.
Yeah, I've been doing Air Creed experiments back in Brooklyn and Staten Island, New York.
Well, you were doing that on your YouTube channel too, weren't you?
Yeah, yeah. That's how it started when I started my experimenting to figure out how I was going to build my home inexpensively.
Okay, now the land that you got, you know, it definitely looked southwestern. I'm thinking, I hope he's in Arizona, but you're in Colorado. Where?
Yeah, it's Trinidad, Colorado.
Which is what part of the state?
As far south as you could go, right before New Mexico, right off of Highway 25. It's the last city before New Mexico.
Okay, so yeah, that's kind of what we, you know, it looked like there. Well, how far in the center, east, west on the border there?
I'm north. It's northeast from the border.
No. I mean, are you on the western part of the state, the eastern part of the state, and the center?
Oh,
so we get an idea of where you're at.
Yeah, it would be the center state.
Okay, I'm familiar with that. That's where Edwards was. You know, there is a gentleman, there's a valley there that is just big, flat valley, and we're familiar with some other people that were trying to do the same thing, but the man shows up. You know, so how all permitted and stuff are you? How'd that go?
Yeah, well, that went good because, you know, that's part of my building process. So before we went on the break, you mentioned about friends coming over because it's so beautiful here. And it's true. And that's part of why I started developing this building method to make it easy for anybody to do so that anyone can do the same thing and build. And so the big thing is building codes. You know, you can't build anything you want. And so the big thing that I learned was I couldn't get a purely aircrete structure, although it was a dome, I couldn't get that anywhere in the country because of building codes, because the engineers or the building department doesn't recognize aircrete as a construction material, especially, you know, as an insulator or anything. So
why? Because it's bad?
No, just because there hasn't been enough testing done, you know.
No. It's because it's good. They, you know, this is, I'm telling you, we've been through this, and it comes down to sustainable this and that, and they don't want us on the man. You know, this You know, this is when you start making it easy and cheap for people to have dwellings and a family, a young family with, you know, 2.3 kids or something comes out and the husband and wife can spend 3 months and all of a sudden they're living large and doing, you're not paying mortgages. You're not, you know, you don't have debt. You're not in the system, man. You're doing it wrong. So I'm in the same mindset. So we're asking these questions because we're kind of been working on this for decades ourselves. I'm at right now, we have the Love Bus. We're traveling. We sold everything, and my wife and I converted a bus into a studio, and we've been traveling the country on two things. One, do I own my, you know, like are they going to mandate some notion and potion they're going to inject me with, kind of crap. And if it pleases the crown, may I occupy my own land? Because if I can pitch a tent in front of City Hall and I'm good, you know, but if I take that same tent and I put it on land I own without a permit from the crown, I go to jail. And whoa, when the hell did that happen? Okay?
Yeah.
And I'm just, what the heck? So if you can find land of your own, you're not violating the life, liberty, property of another human being. You're just chilling, and I'm doing my own thing, and I'm not bothering anybody, and I don't have, I don't know, a hog farm or doing laser light shows or whatever. I'm not you know, disturbing someone else's peaceful use of their property. What the hell do you care what I do? You know, so this is, and then you get into water things, then we got harvesting of water, and then wells or not, and everything. So we're looking at the same thing here. Years ago, we started making geodesic domes out of conduit. You know, we got a stamp press. We can whip out a dome and, you know, three-phase, four-phase, five, six, whatever, however size, you know, from 16 to 20, whatever foot, and, you know, half-inch, three-quarter inch. I mean, we can rock and roll and whatnot. The problem is the covering. We've been looking on, and Aircrete's got a lot of our attention. Then how do you wrap it and reinforce it? Now, because the dome itself is the reinforcement. It is the rebar. So we're going, okay. But what you did is by making that interior, then when we do it, we just peel the Tyvek away, and you got a nice interior not spend 5 billion years on. And I'm going, this is what we want to do. So I'm looking to help you if you, you know, get you a dome to play with, the, you know, the, have all that. And we know some architects that may know some structural mechanics and engineers and so on. And I'm going, you know, maybe we can do something. But I wanted to get an idea of where you're at, how much, as you're doing this and working on it, is there a guy with a clipboard and a shiny badge and, you know, and the horn-rimmed glasses showing up telling you what's up?
No, because, you know, there's a company, Monolithic Domes, and they're the commercial dome building company in the United States.
Yeah.
And they've been building legally permitted domes in the country for a long time. So I had to go to what I could do. I had to copy what they're doing in order to get it permitted. So I had the structural engineer design it where I had a structural shell. See, this is the main reason. This is also a big reason why I do think permits and all that stuff is good in some ways. Maybe not the permit so much, but what I'm getting at is a lot of people want to build their own home and really don't know how to, and they really could kill themselves by building it wrong, you know? And you could do something
themselves?
Really stupid.
I'm for all about themselves.
me too, as long as it's themselves, right? But so what I've done is basically I had to make a structural shell that is safe and then add my Aircrete or my Epic. Now, there's two different mixes there. We have the Aircrete, which is just shaving cream mixed with a cement slurry, and then we have the Epic, which is polystyrene mixed with paper in cement slurry.
Okay, why? What was just the insulated power? The Aircrete wasn't enough? Did it add something to it? Why did you do that?
Well, I was introduced to the Epic Mix by a guy named Dave Pentington. He's down in Texas. And he saw my channel and called me and said, hey, I got this mix. And he sent me a video of a dome being struck by a 12-pound sledgehammer, and it was just putting dents in the structure. And I know if that were Aircrete, the sledgehammer would have gone right through easily.
Okay, we're going into break now. Now we're going to deal with that. But I tell you, when we come back, we're going to get all the structural integrity stuff, but maybe ballistics. We got ballistics. We need Kevlar. You know, something. I don't know. We're going to find out. Faraday FM.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, another independence declaring kind of individual, Aircrete Harry. You know, this is the one thing that is so fundamental to people is I don't get too hot, I don't get too cold, I'm not too hungry, not too thirsty, I'm not too wet, you know, it's not too windy, it's not, I got shelter, you know, I can start, like, feeding myself and stuff and breathing in and out and having a life, leave me aloneism. Well, this is, what Harry has done is he bought a piece of, do you mind telling the people how much land you got, or and if you're willing, you know, how much it costs and you know, what it costs to build your dream here and where, you know, what you're doing for resources. I mean, is YouTube covering, YouTube's paying, building your house for you? I mean, tell us how kind of the financials, because I know they're going to want to know that.
I'll explain some of it. The property is a 35-acre parcel. Most of the lots around this area, they come in 35-acre parcels. And I don't really want to get into what I paid, but the average in this area is $1,000 an acre. That's the going rate in a lot of Colorado, especially this part. The house I've estimated the structure itself to cost about $30,000 to build, and that's approximately 2,000 square feet, which is insane, you know, when you think of 2,000 square feet.
Well, the labor, I mean, if I had a husband and wife, you know, comes in, or maybe a couple of families or something like that, and they're going, all right, we got the land, you know, we gotta build a house, let's get on it. You know, what kind of time you looking at? You got the right equipment. And we'll talk about equipment here in a minute.
Yeah, well, for example, the 16-foot dome, actually, to answer your question straight, I'm pretty sure I could build any size dome up to a 40-foot in 7 days, complete it in 7 days. So it's really a quick process. And a lot of that has to do with the cement mix, the different mixes I'm using. I actually use as little water as possible, and in some cases I use no water in my cement mix because water makes cement weak, you know. When you hydrate cement, and a thing to remember about cement is cement cures more than it does dry. It's a chemical process. And so the thing with cement is it's hard to work with cement unless you add enough water to make it movable. But which are water reducers, which will allow your cement to get very strong by adding a lot less water. So this is all things that's part of the recipe that I've come up with. You know, I've done a lot of experimenting with different plasticizers and latex additives and things like this.
See, I remember early on when you first were doing this, God, I don't even know how long ago was that, years or something, you had like little round bowls or something you would put a bunch of different mixes in, and you would test it on camera, and you'd show, and you'd hit, and you'd do different things. And, you know, finally, I guess someone contacted with this Epic Mix. But the Epic Mix, I want to be clear with the audience, it is paper, styrofoam, cement. It doesn't have the Aircrete in it. Is that correct?
That's correct. There's no shaving cream foam mixed into it.
Okay, now when would you use Aircrete over this other mix?
Now the Aircrete I will be using, but the Aircrete I use as the insulation for the slab. So because the system I'm building is a frost shack depth system, and if you look that up, there are a PDF file you can find about frost shallow depth footer systems, which is allows you to not have to go to frost depth with your footer. So in a lot of colder parts of the country, you might have to go as deep as 40 inches with your footer before you can build your structure on top so that you can get past the frost line so that you can avoid any frost heaving of your foundation. So a way around having to use all that cement is getting building a frost shallow depth footer system. And so using that, you can go as deep as 12 to 16 inches deep. Now, the trick to that is you have to insulate the ground around your foundation. So vertically, you have to have an R15 styrofoam against your foundation. And horizontally, you have to go 4 feet out with an R30 insulation. And that has to be around the entire perimeter of your foundation.
Oh, my God, it seems like such a pain in the butt. I just do the 40 inches and do a basement or something. Screw that, you know?
I mean, depending on where you're building, like I'm in the Rocky Mountains, and what I learned is the Rocky Mountains have been named that for a reason. Because when I go to dig, I hear rock.
Okay,
rock.
I feel you. You know, that's a lot easier, yeah, unless you got dynamite and, you know.
So it depends on where you are in the country. The thing for me was I knew I was planning to build a lot of dome. So that 40 inches, you know, that would be easily probably like 5 or 6 yards of cement, you know, you're spending. So if you're trying to save money, that's not the way you want to go. So I would suggest to your listeners to look into frost shallow depth footer systems, because it's a legal system that you can build in the country.
Okay, listen, you keep saying legal and permit and all that. I'm wondering, you know, you go, well, I want to do this dome, and you got some shiny badge from the government came out and said, well, you got to do it this way. I mean, were they telling you to make it structural, you know, putting the chain link or whatever you're using, a chicken wire and stuff? Then he was saying, Okay, you're good if you do that.
Yeah, no, the structural engineering plans I got were for what's called an eco shell, which is a structural shell built on an air form on the outside. Now, that term comes from monolithic eco shell, because mm-hmm. that's a type of air form they make. But that type of structure it's known as that. So by building a reinforced concrete structure, this is how I was able to get permitted and get my structural engineer to approve it. Now, if I told him aircrete alone, a structure with just aircrete, he wouldn't want to have anything to do with me. And it'd be impossible to build in counties that require, you know, building permits and structural engineering.
See, this is, you know, so the structural engineer that you are looking for that you need is to what?
It's for everybody else who wants to do what I'm doing. I need to get somebody, because my engineer wouldn't or doesn't agree to doing this blindly for anybody, this permitting, this structural engineering. You know, I couldn't get his stamp for somebody else. I got it for myself, but I asked him if he would, and he's just not willing to do that. Well, and I don't know why.
See, I'm wondering, is he talking about jurisdictions or different states, or, you know, you trust him?
He's permanent for all the states in the country, so I guess there's just not enough information on, you know.
Why you? Because you're pretty? I mean, why? What?
I don't know. I think it's just based on that I have the experience of what I'm doing. I think that's the main thing that told them okay. Because the thing with structural engineer is they don't want to be sued or liable for a structure built that someone gets hurt, injured, or dies in. So as long as the structural engineer is confident that you're not going to die, I think you could get them to approve your structure a lot easier. But that's all it comes down to, is the engineer being liable. And so,
all right, I'm looking to help. We'll talk here in the break. We're coming in a break, and we're very interested. I'm here with my friend Bob Anderson, and he's listening. And we've been working on this for a long time, and he has a big 28-foot dome sitting here waiting to, you know, play with him. We're like, he's retired, and I'm vacation.
Freedom is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free. I want to break free from your lies. Yes, so
declare your independence from here. It's really easy. You like it. You go, I declare my independence. See how easy it was? No government form. Nope. You can't be independent if you're dependent, and a lot of people are dependent on a system of, you know, just tell me I want to live kind of in this area, and all these other people did everything, and, you know, paperwork you don't understand and conditions that you don't know, and, you know, I totally agree, and, you know, blah 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 blah. And I'm, you know, so I'm as interested in, you know, I'm willing to, you know, be reasonable and do and whatever. I'm just not, I don't like asking permission, because then you deserve to be told no. No, it's my freaking land, my freaking property. I'm doing it. I'm not bothering anybody. Go away. Well, but we love you so much. We love you so much. We don't want you to hurt yourself or other people. We're going to take care of you. All right. Well, you know, so we'll come up with, and I'm going, all right, you want me to bulldoze it? Okay, well, then show me it's unsafe. Well, nope, got to bulldoze it. And then the bulldozer can't knock it over, and I go, I guess I was safe. You know, so I'm good when they park your bulldozer on top. So Aircrete Harry has been, with that in mind, has been doing this very thing, and he's trying to build structures that anyone can do, and it's easy. Now, we were down with Green Dream Project in southeast Arizona, and he got 40 acres for $15,000. But it had a road to it, a nice road. And I'm going, holy crap. Now he's out in the middle of freaking nothing, next like 60 miles from the Mexican border, and it was lay nothing.
I think that's more of an asset than anything else.
I know. You know, I'm like, you know, some people pay extra for that. But he, rain harvesting is what got Bob interested, and working hard doing earth bag, and it's so labor intensive. And I'm thinking, man, if you had, so we're going to do you a solid, man. We're going to bring you a dome, because it was months ago, like this last summer that I interviewed. And I said, you know, when I get back to Arizona, we're traveling the country and here for the holidays, families and so on. And I go, I'll bring one of these down so you can just play with it. Well, you're already, you know, past the stage of where we wanted to be with the mix and the gun. Now, Bob, you wanted to ask him about that.
You said you're going to talk about spraying, and I'd like to hear more about that, because that's, you know, how's he doing it, what's he doing it with, kind of, and what successes he had with it, because it's, you know, for doing a big dome like this, I ain't hand troweling that.
I know. We had one friend up in Ashford.
I can't hear Bob in the background. He's coming in choppy to me.
It
might be through the system. I don't know.
Yeah.
Can you hear Bob now?
3-3-3-2-2-2.
He sounds very low.
Okay.
Mostly just concerned, or not concerned, just curious what you're using to spray with and how successful are you? Because, like say, doing a really big dome, we're not going to hand trowel that. We have to be able to spray it.
Yeah, see, this is the thing. As far as the spraying, there was two different mixes I was spraying. The first mix I sprayed on the first dome that I built.
Please, go ahead.
Oh, the first dome I sprayed last year that I built at this time was an Epic Mix. And that was through a Parle Stiltec pump. And it pumped fine for the structural mix, but it was no good on the insulative mix that had a lot more styrofoam. The pump failed at that. The other thing the pumps worked good at was...
Did it break it or just didn't do it well?
It didn't do it at all, because it's just not designed to pump that type of material. Usually these pumps have to have a lot of fines in it that allows it to work. So what I am working on now, or I actually have made, I'm just waiting for my hopper mixer, is it's a gear pump. And the gear pump works for all the mixes that I make. So the Epic, the Aircrete, and regular cement slurries, I can pump with this pump that I have made. And it's good for everything. So,
okay, now, first question, all right, how big, how much, can you build it yourself? Did you order it from Russia? I mean, what?
The pump I had built, it's... Well, I'm putting it together right now still, and everything's not done, but when completed, I think it may cost between $8,000 and $10,000 for the entire system. Now, obviously, this is not for everyone. This is for someone ready to build like I am, because this pump system is what makes it easier. Like, you could do it manually with one of those handheld, you know, three jet nozzle sprayers, mortar sprayers, you know, the stuckle sprayers.
Yeah.
You can build that way. I am not of that mindset. I want to get it done quickly and as easy as possible. So this machine will not only help me, but it'll help anybody wanting to build quickly or get into business.
How big is the nozzle? Is it like you're spraying gunite, you know, like you're doing a pool or something?
It's 1-inch nozzle. The hose is 1-inch, so that there's not a lot of material going through it, because when you see me spraying, actually, you don't see it in the video, but there's a point where I'm standing on top of the scaffolding spraying the roof of the dome. And when I'm up there, I have this 2-inch hose on my shoulder filled with concrete up 12 feet up in the air, you know, actually higher than that. And so it was extremely heavy, and it's a real pain in the shoulder to move around. So when I came up with my mixer pump design, I chose to go with a smaller hose to make it a lot easier to spray for one person to work everything and not have to struggle.
And how thick do you make your walls, you know, on top of your infrastructure?
The structural shell, which is basically just a cement mix. What am I looking for? It's just a regular cement slurry with sand in it. That first mix gets sprayed on about a half an inch thick onto that netting. The fiberglass mesh sock hat that I put on is mosquito netting. It's fiberglass, is really strong, relatively inexpensive, that I sew up and slip on. So onto that fiberglass mesh, I spray about a quarter inch to half inch of cement, and that gives me a structure that I can then work on top of. I could even stand on it once that amount of cement's been sprayed, and then I can apply the other reinforcing materials, such as the stucco wire mesh.
Yeah, see, and a lot of what we're doing is the spraying. You know, we're like, man, we need to get a sprayer. And we did the stucco thing. We were kind of, you know, wanting to play with that. And we're going, yeah. When you got a 28-foot dome, I mean, damn, you know. So it's this is something that we're interested in. Are you interested in geodesic domes as, you know, the infrastructure for it to kind of be the rebar to hold it? Or you're happy with the way you're doing it now with your sock and such?
Yeah, I'm happy now. I've had people ask me about the geodesics and if I'm going to be doing them and whatnot. And I have some friends upstate New York. They have a piece of property. Man, I always forget the name for some reason. It's Havens. Oh, my God. I'm so sorry, guys. Sam and the whole family over there. But anyway, Haven. Oh, man. Havens Habitat, I believe this is the name of their, what they have going on over there. And they've got geodesic domes. One is a greenhouse and one is a structure to live in.
Well, the reason I thought of you for that is because sometimes your air pressure Tyvek collapses. I mean, you've had failures, and I'm going...
No, I said on the video that I have the fear of having a failure, but I've never had one.
Oh, okay. I thought one of the airbags went and you kind of deconstructed the wall. You know, we could see it. Was that you? I thought it was.
Oh, no. Yeah. I did have an air form that I forgot to turn the blower on before I started spraying the insulative mix. And so that one collapsed. But that was a small prototype that I was testing.
Yeah, this is we're very, 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 very interested in this. And, you know, the biggest reason that I'm looking forward to that is in the geodesic, because you can build it in a lot of different shapes, like conduit connections. And we've done that before with the aquadome in aquaponics. And I'm going, you can make whatever shape you want. You build it first, you wrap it, you've done it. Come by and visit you?
Yeah, I wouldn't mind.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember... I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Declare your independence. Ernest Hancock here in Tonopah, Arizona. We're broadcasting from the Love Bus, a little old place where we can get together. I just violated a copyright. I'm in trouble now. I did intellectual property. I used too many. I can get you on copyright in five notes. Stephen Kinsella, an intellectual property attorney, is registered patent attorney in Houston. Formerly a partner in the intellectual property practice group of Dwayne Morris and general counsel for Applied Optoelectronics. He's had over 20 years law firm. He has over 20 years law firm and in-house experience in patent, IP, intellectual property, and general commercial and corporate law. Now, he's got a bunch of big, long bio, talked to everybody, did everything, and we know him from, intellectual property. He works a lot with the Mises Institute. He's buds with Bob Murphy and Tom Woods and, you know, with the crowd and everything. And so he's one of the in-group we can talk to and get a straight answer on a lot of this stuff. From the last time when we first started talking, it was like 10, I think. So it's been like 10 years. And 10, 11, you know, 9, well, or about a decade. And the first time that I could really articulate why I have problems with intellectual property, you know, Stefan has done a really good job at making sure that this is an issue that's well understood and how debilitating intellectual property is to creativity and things being done. Well, our answer has been, if you can't take it down, if you decentralize everything and IPFS nodes and we put up, and I can take here and do a video with all kinds of stuff in it and movie clips and so on, and there forever and always, and you can't take it down. Well, Stefan, you know, where am I in that? If I take, then I put it up, and it's, you know, it's toured, it's out there, and you know, do I get in trouble, you know, if nobody's hosting it and everybody is, and, you know, but I put it up, so I'm in trouble? How does that work?
Well, yeah, there's one study that a law professor did about 7-8 years ago, John Tehrani, and it's on my website, c4sif.org. And he was trying to figure out how much liability like average American has every year from little things we do. You know how like we have so many laws now that you can't go a day without violating a law, right? A statute, just by living, which gives the police and government a lot more discretion about who they want to enforce these laws against because they can't enforce them all. So everyone's a lawbreaker, and so just like in East Germany and Soviet Russia, you know, back in the day of the police state, everyone was always
going
through something.
You know, I want to inject this one story. What happened was, mm-hmm. I think it was the 50s or 60s, it was an old black and white television program, and it was like $5,000 if you could go an entire day without breaking a law.
Right.
And the guy, and they followed him around with a camera, and he walked outside of the studio, opened a pack of cigarettes, had a cigarette, boom, he lost. And he goes,
yeah.
What? Because you're supposed to destroy that little tax stamp on the bottom of the pack of cigarettes or you're in violation of the law.
And, right. And this gets at something else I've written about, which is legislation versus law. In the original way that the law developed in the Roman law and in the common law, these are decentralized legal systems where the law – develops by basically judges or arbitrators hearing a dispute between two people and coming up to that dispute. And over time, the rule that the judge comes up with becomes part of the law and they develop over time. So the law is kind of predictable, it moves slowly, and it's always about trying to do justice in a dispute between people, normally about property, right? Property disputes. And with the rise in the 20th century, primarily after World War One and the rise of democracy, as Hoppe talks about in his democracy book, you had also a rise of legislation as the primary growing means of making law. So legislation is now predominant in most legal systems, like in Europe, that's the civil law system, and even in the common law countries like England and the U.S. and Canada and Australia. What that means is that laws just proliferate, and you start having more and more laws and regulations, so it gets impossible to escape them. In the field of copyright, for example, this guy John Tehranian, a law professor, did a study about that. And now the thing with copyright is, first of all, it's an unnatural law. It's got arbitrary criteria for when you violate it, and also the length of term is arbitrary. It's like life of the author plus 70 years now, but it used to be different. And at least in the beginning of the copyright system, if you infringe someone's copyright, that means you copied their book or something without their permission. The owner of the copyright had to prove damages. So they had to show how much you damaged them by copying it. Like maybe you took away some of their profits or something like that. But legislative changes in the law in the last several decades have introduced what's called statutory damages. So you don't even need to prove damages. You could just use statutory damages. And that's like, I forgot the number, $25,000 per infringing event or something insane like that. It's got no relation to actual damages, which is why by the way, I think the Copyright Act in the U.S. violates the Constitution, because it was enacted based upon the 1789 Constitution, which was first ratified, right, which had Congress to pass copyright law. But 2 years later, in 1791, the Bill of Rights was ratified, and that includes two provisions which I think are incompatible with copyright. The first one is the First Amendment, which has freedom of the press and freedom of speech, and copyright clearly prevents you from publishing certain books, which is a violation of your free press rights. And number two, the Eighth Amendment on cruel and unusual punishments, I think would apply to the statutory damages, because they're so insanely high and out of relation to any damage you did. But anyway, so this guy Tehrani did a study, and he said every average American who uses an iPhone, uses a computer, you know, sometimes you'll copy an article and send it to a friend, you'll send a photograph to someone, you'll put a photograph in a book report. He said because of the way the insane copyright damages work, each one of us is liable for about $3.5 billion a year of damages, each one of us, each American. Multiply $3.5 billion times 320-something million. It's more money than exists in the universe. It's really insane and absurd.
Well, this is by intent. I mean, it's to help and protect and they, them, those of we control every. See, there was one thing in the U.S. Constitution. Was it the Constitution that had copyright in there? Or was it the
Bill? Yeah, the Constitution of 1789 has a copyright and patent clause.
Which says what?
It says to enable something – I don't have it in front of me – but to enable the progress of the arts and the sciences, which, by the way, is backwards. Everyone thinks arts means copyright and sciences means patents, but it's the other way around because of the way words were used back then. But it basically says that Congress has the power to enact – to give authors and inventors basically a monopoly for a limited time.
Used to be, I mean, it was like, I don't know, 7 years, 14 years. It wasn't that long, and they keep it. Once you give them the power, you give them an inch, they take a parsec kind of thing. And so who benefit? I mean, I don't think society or people do. But that doesn't mean that, you know.
Yeah.
All right, we're going into the thing. We'll pick it up there. Because copyright, the right to like print on your own paper whatever you want, was a candy. How the hell did I make it over Merck? You know, who did that? There is, of all the things to be done, we need to tax everybody in the power of the war and the copyright. Yeah, that's the ticket. We're going to find.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800, 602-264-2800, and now, Ernest Hancock.
And Stephen Kinsella. Stephen Kinsella, we're always glad to talk to him. He really had an impact on our articulation of this is just crap. You know, I'm not feeling well. The Constitution, this was a king thing. This was a monarch. This is granting to they, them, those, and the buddies of, and you can control ideas and, you know, combinations of words and how you share that. Just that very concept is an infection. Well, we go America, and we just like, yeah, whatever, you know, we share information. You know, I'm not for, you know, plagiarizing somebody and say it's you and it was somebody else, but that's a whole nother thing, and I don't really even care about that. I mean, you know, I resist the idea that I need to take an ice cream scoop to my cortex and pull out certain things because it might be somebody else thought of it first, or they formed it in a different way, which they got it from somebody else before them and before them. And all of a sudden, when I articulate, I'm not allowed. I'm going, no, I'm not looking at it. I don't care. So what we did is we went the other way. We're like, it doesn't matter. We put it up on IPFS nodes, interplanetary file sharing, to where it replicates out everywhere. We put our content up, and you can't take it down. It's permanent. So it's, I go, yeah, well, you know, life sucks. Get over it. Well, the thing is, am I liable in some way when I didn't, you know, I'm not the one sharing it. It's out. It's on 15 gazillion places. Well, you're the first one. You're patient zero. I mean, you did it. You got to go to jail. And I'm going, yeah, but it's out there, and there's nothing you can do about it. Because that way, I'm not worried about how many seconds of it. Well, they go, well, you can use 7 seconds. I go, shut up. I'm not putting a limit in my creativity. I want movie clips. I want, you know, classic music. I want songs. I want to build a narrative, to build an emotion, to tell a story. Nope, you're not allowed to do it that way. I refuse to get in that mindset. I don't care. So what we did is we're going to where the mechanism is that they can't take it down. Now what? Am I responsible? We're going to get into that. But first, we wanted to finish up with the idea of copyright coming from a king and whatever to begin with.
Yep.
Anyway, and then going into America. All right, give me that transition, man.
Yeah, and by the way, on the study I mentioned, I looked it up in the break, Gante Iranian, it's $4.5 billion we're all potentially liable for. And that was about 10, 12 years ago, so it may be higher now. Yeah, the copyright clause says, Ernie, the Congress has the power to promote the progress of science and the useful arts. And science means artistic writings, basically. And useful arts means practical inventions, right, like artisans would. You there?
Yeah, go ahead. I'm listening.
By securing for limited times to authors and inventors the exclusive right to their respective writings and discoveries. Now, what's interesting, you asked about who benefits from this. I think actually it's pretty simple. Only three big industries in the U.S. benefit, and that is contorted the law in the U.S., and because of America's large size and dominance in the world since World War II and World War I, it is, especially World War II, it has caused the U.S. to put pressure on other countries to adopt our type of IP laws for the benefit of these three big industries in the U.S., and you could probably guess what they are. In the field of patents,
music,
I think
it's – movie, and publishing.
That's for copyright. That's right. So music, movies, and publishing for copyright. And in the field of patents, it's primarily the pharmaceutical industry in the U.S. Okay.
Oh, they rule.
So, and then the funny thing is, you'll hear libertarians who are pro IP because they're confused. They'll say something like, "Well, how is someone supposed to make a profit if someone can just copy them right away?" What they're really complaining about is competition. Like, how can you make a profit if someone can compete with you? It's like,
thank
Jesus
you.
Christ. That's the job of the entrepreneur. But the thing is, so the FDA imposes these extremely onerous regulations that are extremely costly, and they put delays on the public on the development of drugs, and they force the developers to publish their results as they're getting the process done. So by the time they finally have their drug out, they've spent $1 billion on the FDA process, and everyone knows how to make it. So they get competed with right away, and they have a lot of costs to recoup. And so the libertarian solution is, well, the government has imposed all these costs on them. Let's have the government give them a monopoly on this invention for 17 years so that they can recoup the cost that the government put on in the first place. It's like, it doesn't occur to them, like, get rid of the FDA and the patent system. and the antitrust system and the minimum wage and, you know, taxes
prosecute
and regulations.
Force and fraud, man. Violation, non-aggression, golden rule, all that basic crap you're supposed to know in kindergarten. You know, I want to make this one point. Elon Musk, when he did, they asked him why he didn't patent Raptor and his Merlin rocket engines and so on. He goes, why? So you can copy it? You want to reverse engineer it? Buy one. I mean, you know, and you think you can do it better and faster, be my guest. Oh, and by the way, here's all my Tesla patents. Go. You'll be 18 months behind what we're doing anyway. You know,
Musk realized that if you have a patent, it can dissuade people from competing with you, which means he was trying to start a new industry in this electric car thing, and he knew he needs competitors so that there's a big enough market to have the gas stations or the electric powering stations around the country. So he realized that patents hinder innovation and adoption. So he was trying to get the market going. He'd rather have a big chunk of a big pie than the complete chunk of a tiny pie. You know what I mean? So that's what he wanted to do. But what's interesting about the history of all this is it's in the Constitution, in the U.S. Constitution, because, you know, we borrowed a lot of things from the British and the English system, like the Magna Carta influenced the Bill of Rights and things like that. And in the U.K., in Britain, there was at the time two remnants of patent and copyright which influenced us to put it in our Constitution. And one of them was the Statute of Monopolies in 1623, which is the basis of patents. So the kings used to grant these exclusive monopolies to their cronies and say, you're the only guy who can, you know, sell this type of thing in this market. It's totally mercantilism and protectionism. It has nothing to do with the free market. And it was codified in the Statute of Monopolies. They even called it that. So the U.S. patent system comes from the Statute of Monopolies. So it is a monopoly grant, and I thought we libertarians were against state monopolies. And then the copyright system stems from the attempt by the church and the government in the U.K. and in Europe to prevent people from printing the books that weren't approved. So it was rooted in censorship and finally 1909. So our copyright system comes from censorship.
You cut out like somebody was trying to call you. It was censorship of 1709 or 1809?
Yes, the statute of the end of 1709.
1709, okay.
Yeah, I've got my phone on Do Not Disturb, but I guess they're disturbing me anyway. The point is these systems come from state grants of monopoly privilege, which are anti-competitive, and from attempts of the state and the church to censor free speech and freedom of the press. And it's no surprise that this is what happens now. Patent system does hinder innovation and leads to oligopolies and cartels, like in the smartphone industry.
Okay, we're going into the break. But this right, I want to discuss that when we come back. The idea that monopolies are benefiting us in something. And that's a con. That's what Kevin Kinsella has been really good at. No. This is not benefiting us. This is not benefiting humanity. And I'm like, man, I'm with you, brother. We're going to talk.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
And Stephen Kinsella. You know, we're this is the question. I want to make sure this gets done. In the future, as we get with Starlink, I don't know how far up Uncle Sam's butt Elon is, but, you know, if you got the other half of the planet is now online and broadband, you know, it's they're kind of bypassing that. So now you have out of 8 billion, you got half of them online, the other half comes online. What will they do? How are they going to brainwash them in? They got the threatening on their, you know, new phone of going to make you and you're not allowed. And I'm like, man, that's not, I'm not hip to that. So I'm going, when you have the rest of the planet is able, and then you have these decentralized systems where they're able to post stuff up, and they, you know, are going to be very creative in ways that I have no freaking idea. Well, it's up there forever, and they're going to have some, you know, genius kid out of Congo, the Amazon, Bangladesh, and they got something up, and they're going to be claiming copyright. You're not allowed, and everything you ever make forever and always, that's ours, and now you're a debt slave in the new way. And I'm going, all right, what do you think is going to happen in those situations, that be and Stephen?
Well, I just sent you a link. You're talking about uploading files and things like that. So
yeah, I got man sentenced to federal prison for uploading Wolverine movie.
Yeah, so the point is, it's anything you do, if you illegally copy or make a derivative work of, that's a modified version of something. Like if you did a sequel to a movie or to a book, or if you did a movie version of a book or a painting similar to someone's painting, all those are derivative works. Those are also considered copyright infringement. It's you're liable for thousands, tens of thousands of dollars of statutory damages. But it's generally worse to upload than, because if you're making sort of one copy, really, or maybe three copies or something like that in your RAM or whatever. But if you upload, they could say that you're liable for potentially billions of copies, right? Because you're getting it to the internet and then other people copy it and you're enabling that or whatever. So the example I gave you was this guy uploaded a copy of the Wolverine movie, and he was sent to federal prison for a year. I mean, so it's not just civil damages. It's actually criminal penalties for copyright infringement.
As a deterrent, we're going to get this guy as a deterrent for everybody. I've seen him do it with grandmas that downloaded some songs. I mean, you know, but it's not really effective. And a lot of people that know what they're doing, I get entire library. I'm on the bus and I have friends, you know, uploaded on a hard drive. I got movies and series. I got enough to watch the rest of my life. Yeah, what are they going to do about it?
Yeah, and another good example is, remember Aaron Swartz, who was this brilliant young guy. He helped co-invent RSS and all this stuff. And he had downloaded some scholarly articles and then uploaded them to the internet. And the government caught him. And he was facing 35 years in federal prison, billions of dollars in damages, and he committed suicide. It was the saddest thing. So it's horrible. And the other thing about copyright and patent right now, number one, it's being used as this kind of racist, nativist, anti-competitive attack on China. You'll hear over and over again from both parties, the Trumpers and the Republicans and the Democrats, they keep saying that China is stealing our intellectual property. Even the so-called good congressmen like Rand Paul and Massey, you know, even they buy into the copyright bullshit. And they'll say stuff like, China is stealing our IP. They don't even know what they're talking about. They literally don't. First of all, patent and copyright are domestic laws, so it's literally impossible for China or a Chinese company to violate American patent and copyright because they're practicing in China. Now, they probably violate laws in China, but that's up to the Chinese system to control that. And they enforce their system just like we enforce ours. The other thing is, you'll hear a lot of people, like a lot of us libertarians and conservatives, who really are starting to hate Twitter and YouTube and Google and Facebook because of their lefty sort of censorship of thought. They're arguing that we should remove their Section 230 Harbor exemption under the Communication Decency Act and also the related one under the DMCA for copyright infringement, because they're acting like a publisher instead of a neutral platform. And that's dangerous too, I believe, because, you know, the libertarians should know that there should be no defamation liability in the first place, and there should be no copyright liability in the first place. So these safe harbors in the DMCA and the CDA are good things, even if you hate these companies. You don't hate them either. I don't want to impose copyright liability on them and strangle the internet.
Yeah, well, this, you know, okay, let me just pontificate here a second. I'm Zuckerberg. I've been supported by the man from the beginning. Hell, I am the man. No, I'm a clone of the man, whatever the hell. And to think that they don't want to have government involvement is to be naive. They want the government to do whatever the hell they want them to do, and they're going to use them to do it. And Zuckerberg, here's your 40 pieces of, and they probably gave it to him a long time ago. So I'm going, this is to think, oh, no, they're going to defend against government control. BS. They're like, yeah, bring it on, man. We're going to do it and close the door behind us. And nobody else.
Oh, I totally agree. I totally agree. I just don't want copyright infringement liability to be expanded to cover people like me and you and other innocent companies, because if you get rid of the Section 230 of the Communication Decency Act, then that means anyone who has a platform on the internet and allows any kind of user content like comments or submitted articles or a group blog, the publisher or the owner of that domain or that website can be liable for what other people do. Okay, so that means you're going to have to start monitoring, which is the expensive thing, monitoring what everyone does, which, by the way, is just like the reason that the big companies favor minimum wage laws and all these laws, because it doesn't hurt them as much, or they can afford it, but it hurts the little competitors, right? So big business likes all these regulations. They complain about it, but they really secretly like it. I mean, Walmart is in favor of raising the minimum wage. You know why? Because they pay people more than the minimum wage already. So it doesn't hurt them if the minimum wage goes up by $3, because they're already paying above that. But the little competitors, the mom and pops, it would hurt them. So it would remove some competition for Walmart. It's the same thing with the CDA crap. You know, throw me in the briar patch kind of stuff.
Well, what is the trends in the wind? I mean, are people starting to – because I remember when we first – there was libertarians. I can start naming them off. They're going, yeah, but – my intellectual property and my art and my. And we started having you on, and this is becoming a discussion, and it's helped us get ammunition to argue this. But what's the trends now? Are the people starting to say, yeah, you know, Mickey Mouse for, like, ever maybe a bad idea? You know, for...
I think there was a group of us starting in the mid-1990s, right around the time of the Internet, a group of us, me and some others like Roderick Long and Wendy McElroy and Sheldon Richmond and Jeff Tucker, some others, we started pointing out the dangers of IP, especially in the Internet age. And I think that sort of woke up the libertarian community, who had kind of ignored the issue or kind of were complacent on the issue or kind of bad on the issue because of Ayn Rand's confused views and people like that. Yeah. And so I think we made some headway with the libertarian movement. I would say a good chunk of the libertarian movement, like maybe 25%, especially the more radical Austrian anarchist Rothbardian ones, they're pretty much all anti-IP now. But the remainder are either not that bright, or they're kind of utilitarian, or they just still don't get it. So I think we've kind of petered out in what we can do. We've kind of converted a third of the movement, roughly, and that's about all we can do for now. I've been trying to get the Libertarian Party to put as part of their platform an anti-patent and anti-copyright clause, but of course they're never going to do that because
You know, things change. I've been, you know, dealing with this, you know, Bob and I, you know, over a couple of 25 years dealing with libertarians, and they wax and wane and go back and forth. But that's one thing real quick I wanted to get your the Libertarian Party is not very libertarian. I mean, people think more of Dr. Ron Paul than, or Mises or something, or
yep,
Lou Rockwell before. When you go libertarian, they're not thinking Libertarian Party. You know,
yep, I know.
And is that a vehicle for the future? I was very disappointed that Jacob didn't get the nomination, but it's like intent, and I'm going to say it out loud. It's the Kokopus. You know, these guys use the Libertarian Party as a influence, a bucket of influence votes to get whatever the hell else they want, has nothing to do with being free. And I'm going, this is, hey man, politics sucks, but intellectual, philosophical discussion during political...
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
And we're back. We're not back. We are back. Am I turning the right one? Yeah, I guess we're back. All right. We're here. We're talking to Stephen Kinsella, you know, on the phone, and I'm, you know, they've changed the... you know, the clock, so we get it right. This has been an interesting conversation, and I wish we had recordings in the break with Stefan, because I'm asking him a lot of things, and, you know, personal stuff, and their activism over at Mises and what he's been working on and doing out of Houston. What do you think this election cycle? Yeah, I don't give a crap. You know, that Trump, Biden, whatever. I wrote an article Monday, the day before the election. Go, look, man, it makes no difference to me. You know, either, you know, both of them are going to be screaming for the Fed to do something. They're still going to have, you know, the concept of taxation. They're still, and Trump's still working to negotiate and order the deal, whatever. And these guys don't negotiate, and of course, because they don't think they have to. And then, you know, here we got Biden. I'm the future in all that you're looking at. And intellectual property is an important part. It's an arm, like you're saying, everybody's guilty of, and if you make enough laws, everybody's guilty, and they're going to get you. So I'm just, you know, where do you think the threat's coming from as we get into this next, even next year, Stefan. I mean, you know, more lockdowns, or it's, you know, it's an eventual destruction of the middle class and all entrepreneurs and every restaurant owner and business owner, unless you're a big box of drone delivery approved from the FAA, Amazon, kind of, you know, and Walmart. I mean, you know, you're in the middle of it. You know, give us your opinion on what's up this year.
Well, I think a lot of people were a little bit surprised, a lot of libertarians even. I heard Tom Woods talking about this the other day, surprised that the American people sort of were so docile, and they sort of rolled over and they accepted all the lockdown stuff, even when it dragged on for more than the first month or two they said it was going to be. I guess everyone thought we would react with outrage, but it really hasn't happened. So I'm afraid that the aftermath of all this, I do think the lockdown stuff will subside after COVID is squelched later this year, hopefully, or later next year. But I think we'll have a remnant of the stuff like we did after 9/11. You know, now we've ratcheted up the security stuff on the airlines and all that. So I'm afraid we're going to have lingering after effects. But I mean, it's the first time in my life, and I'm not that young. I'm 55. I mean, I think I've been through the Reagan, Bush one, you know, Clinton, Bush two, Obama, and now Trump. And it's, to be honest, my life has gotten better every year. So even when the Democrats were in power, they were bad, but they were sort of middle of the road. But this time I was terrified of Biden winning because the leftists seem to be in control now, and they seem to be out of control about what they want to do. So I'll be honest, I am totally terrified if the Republicans don't hold at least one of those seats in Georgia. If they don't hold one of those seats, then we are totally screwed. I don't know what the lefties will do, but I think if the Republicans hold one of those seats, they'll prevent the filibuster from being changed, and that will require 60 votes to do this major democratic socialist crap they want to do. And I think you'll have some Republican defectors, but not nine. So my hope is that one of those Republicans wins in Georgia. Otherwise, I'm really terrified about what the next decade is going to look like.
Yeah, I hate the idea of depending on any election anywhere.
I know.
You know, I'm like this. I'm not playing that game. You know, we did. Corbett and I pushed Friday. We had the artwork and the site for it in 15, and we really pushed it this year. It's blackmarketfriday.info, and Black Market Friday was just kind of, we can you get them to not, you know, use everybody, you know, enrich all these monopolists. One day. You pick one day. All right, Black Market Friday. Start getting your bartering set up. Start using alternative currencies. Start, you know, demonstrating what the community can do. And it wasn't so much that we had a big, giant impact on it. That wasn't my concern. My concern was is that we create infrastructure and the idea and the concept of being able to, you know, instead of giving them a bunch of money, hell, spend half as much and get a better used one on Craigslist and pay for it in silver or crypto. So this is just the mindset. That's the only thing that's going to beat these guys. It has to be that we're not worried about screw them. This has to be because we have the – that's what PiratesWithoutBorders.com is all about. We got PiratesWithoutBorders.com, letters of Captain Mark, and reprisal up there. And the point that we're making is that decentralization of everything, communication, energy, food and water, shelter, transportation, education, you know, on and on and on, we have up there, and the technology that supports that. Just in the last year, wow, solar electricity has plummeted. Well, you can get 23 cents a watt, and I remember paying dollars and dollars a watt before. Now the inverters are a lot better. The charge controllers are a lot better. The batteries are getting, oh, my God, a lot better. You take that away, you find some water, now it's communication. Here comes Starlink. Well, what do you know? I mean, intellectual property might be a link into Starlink and how everybody has access to the internet. I mean, you got any thoughts on that when any and everybody get from everywhere?
Well, yeah. Well, I hate to always bash on the IP thing, but getting my head straight on it in the last – yeah, well, it's key to everything. And I'll give you – so I wrote a post about, like, how does it rank – like, I think it's one of the top six or seven things the state does, like war, you know, central banking, the Fed, government schools, taxation, the drug war, all those are horrible, but the one thing about those things is that at least radical principled libertarians all know that those things are bad. Even if you're a minarchist, you support some taxes, but you know taxes are a necessary evil. But intellectual property goes under the banner of property, so it's insidious and it confuses people. And it touches everything. So, for example, the internet is key to activism and freedom and information and education and learning and communication and organizing. And so anything that threatens freedom on the internet is bad, and copyright does that because the government uses copyright infringement as an excuse to regulate and control the internet. That's why you have YouTube taking videos down, or the DMCA six strikes thing. You'll find websites that have a big banner up that have been shut down by the government. And also, you talk about Bitcoin, which I'm a big enthusiast of. I can give you not a scoop really, but I'm part of a group that is about to roll out an alliance where we're trying to prevent the growing patent threat to Bitcoin. So there are some players, there are some people trying to amass patents, and they're to be patent trolls and to basically hamper the entire blockchain, crypto, Bitcoin ecosystem by threatening all these companies with patent infringement lawsuits. And so we have an alliance of certain people growing to try to fight that threat. And that will be announced before too long.
Yeah, no, I could see, you know, Craig Wright was going that direction. Is he one of the primary guys?
I don't want to mention names, but your instincts are not horrible.
Yeah, no, I could see. It's just a mind. It's just, yeah, that's one thing. I just want to get this out. It has become more and more obvious to me that what we're up against is the biblical evil, and what that was psychopathy, sociopathic, no empathy of we can, so we are, duh. So when they go to me and they say, Ernie, do you believe in conspiracy A, B, C? Or I go, I don't know. Can they? Can they maintain, enhance, and expand their intrusiveness over the individual to benefit them? Can they? Is it physically possible? Do they have the resources? Well, then they are. What do you think? What, you guys got a moral hurdle they can't get? Oh, we wouldn't do that. Election fraud? No, that would be wrong. I mean,
right.
Come on. So I'm for make it to where they cannot do things. If you can do it where they cannot, well, then I'm feeling better. Until then, don't sit there and think you're going to lobby your way out of this. So if they can maintain and expand their control and intrusiveness using intellectual property, what makes you think that you're going to have any influence on them stopping?
Oh, I totally can. Using it to as an excuse to have to limit free trade with China, and they're also using it as an excuse to restrict free trade with other countries in terms of what they call re-imports of pharmaceuticals. Which could rise to the fore with this COVID vaccine stuff. You'll have like large American pharmaceutical companies selling these drugs at insane prices in the U.S. because of the patent system gives them a monopoly, right? They have no competition, so they can sell it for whatever they want. And you combine that with the medical system, the doctors giving prescriptions, right, and the FDA's regulations on top of that. And so these drug companies sell drugs for insane prices.
Yeah, but when they sell pharmaceuticals, man, they're always the one. Great,
they are,
Stephen Kinsella, I'm sorry, we're going into the end of the show. Stephen Kinsella, intellectual property here to me. Not put all the other shows that we had in the archive with him. There's a lot of good conversations that we had building up to this. Now, here we go. What's the future going to be? I don't know. We're going to stay up with it. Stephen Kinsella. Right.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Oh, man, that Trump report, got to get an update. It ain't over yet. It ain't over. Except today, we're not going to be able to do, you know, commercial break talk, after talk, you know, because we got, you know, problem with the audio. So Frank's got to say it during the live show. This is it. Skip to the end. Dr. Frank, all right, tell us what we need to know, man. Go.
Skip to the end. Trump is awesome. I think I'm about done.
Yeah,
all right. Well, I'll skip to the end. That's pretty much it. All right, so look, there's a lot to talk about. Before we do, just one quick little things about concept of peak Trump I want to talk about. Will Donald Trump leave January 6th? What will Mike Pence do? Will he certify, not certify this election? We have dual electors, a bunch coming from Arizona and other states. There is,
okay, whoa.
Wait.
Pence certify the election. What does that mean?
To certify the election. That means that's the last straw, which is on January 6th, where the vice president counts all the votes ultimately and finally, and that's on January 6th. That's when the president is officially chosen. And we'll talk about this. Rand Paul is about to jump in to contest this. So we have Rand Paul in the mix, who's actually respected from the left, and he's throwing a big monkey wrench into the left's machine, telling us all that there's nothing to see here and move along. We've got Georgia exploding, going nuts over the Senate runoff, and there's so much going on with Georgia, which is kind of cracking the veneer of the neocons. Then, of course, we had with Mitch McConnell, who just basically told Donald Trump, hey, man, Donald, just turn around for a minute. I got a knife to stick between your shoulder blades. So there's a lot to talk about. But before we go on to all of that, I just have to tell all of you guys who listen to the show every day, and we have The Matrix playing in the intro. Some of you may not or may not be aware, but Matrix Part 4 just finished wrapping recently. So we're all going to be treated to a brand new Matrix directed by one of the sisters, and the whole cast is back again. So it should be great for some more quotes.
Yeah, streamed on HBO, Showtime, whatever.
Anyway, for this show, there's so much wrapped around the Matrix and red pilling and concepts of liberty. I just wanted to throw that out that maybe we should do.
Are they going to go to theaters? Yeah. I'm seeing a bunch of movies are going in theaters on this date or HBO primetime.
No. That's some other time. But yeah, HBO Max is going bankrupt, and they put all their chips in years ago to compete with Netflix, and they're losing big time. And so they have basically ticked off the entire theater chains. Theaters are going the way of the dodo, and everyone's blaming HBO Max and two executives that blah, blah, blah. Let's skip it. But, yeah, I know all about that. It's a whole other story. All right, so let's get back to Trump here. So the Trump report. So
awesomeness of Trump.
Exactly, and the awesomeness of the voter integrity of this country. Now, speaking of which, there is the and by the way, I also got a lot of interesting comments from viewer listeners regarding our interview with Judge Buttrick last week. I think a lot of people thought I was a bit overly nice, or at least I was, some people got some interesting thoughts with
that. He was a federal judge. What do you think he's going to say?
Well, he's also a libertarian, right? I mean, he's like libertarian. And one of the comments I got from a lot of listeners, I just want to throw up now, is his comment when I asked him directly, do you think any voter fraud happened at all? Do you think that voter fraud affected this? And he basically said no. He doesn't think there's really much fraud really going on. And I know I feel like I'm kind of like stuck between the two of you. You've got people who think there's no fraud at all, and then from your point of view, it's like why bother doing it? And then exactly. So I think it does say a lot because here you have somebody who's a judge who, if anything, I'm not trying to knock on him personally with this, but I think his comments and the way he was resolving it mentally says a lot about why we have so many different divides. Because here's someone who I would assume sees how the sausage is being made as a federal judge. He's part of our economic discussion group. We have very interesting discussions there, and a lot of like you said on the air last week.
Now he's on Zoom now. Screw that.
Yeah. So things that you have talked about and you said on the air last week, how many things have you brought up and predicted that have had that have come out that people thought, oh, Ernie's crazy again, and these things have panned out? Now, I've agreed with most of them, but a lot of the people at that discussion group were more conservative, and you know, you've made a big influence in that group.
No, I enjoy people, saying Neon, I told you so.
I know. But what I'm saying is you have the judge doing that. And then also, you know, having more of a libertarian background, I just feel that libertarians tend to become libertarian enough when you see how the system works or how the sausage machine doesn't work. So for him, that some of his comments and also not understanding the Trump movement, why people are voting for him, and also he sounded like kind of like what you're hearing a lot of the establishment now saying, which is, all right, get back in line. Trump is over already. Let's go back to voting for the Bushes and the neocons and let's just and like Mitch McConnell. Okay, well, that was a fun ride, but now let's
John Patrick did back say, to I got to put this in for his defense. One thing he did say is if they do certain things, he's like, yeah, and I'm looking to first time move out of the country, which he may very well do. And a lot of these people that have resources that are in this position, they're going, yep, I know where an expat group is of and I don't know if there is going to be anywhere else. This is it.
I completely agree. So in all fairness, again, to the judge, he's not here to defend himself, and I'm not trying to take shots at him that way. I'm just saying he represents what I realize is, you know, a very good person who's there out there. I mean, he's educated. He's the guy's a federal judge. He's seen a lot of corruption, I'm sure. And I know the stuff he's exposed to, at least at the discussion group. And yet still, you have people who maybe still don't understand what this Trump movement is. And I think the one thing that really got a lot of listeners, too, and they picked up on, is he's making the same mistake that many people do on the left, which is they don't understand why people supported Donald Trump. They think that he is a figurehead. They think that we were all nice, compliant Republican neocons who voted for John McCain because we liked him. And then all of a sudden, Donald Trump showed up and he got in our brains and he screwed us up, just like how white people who were complacent, I said this last week, thought about Dr. King, that black people never rioted. They weren't complaining. They sat in the back of the bus. Everything was fine. And then Dr. King came and riled these people up. And he was a danger and a threat. And if we just get rid of Dr. King, then black people go back to the peaceful way that we've always had it. And that is what these people on the left, and I think establishment Republicans, honestly believe. And that is, if anything's disrespectful, I think that concept is. They don't mean to be, but I think that's the biggest mistake. And I guess I was a little shocked and surprised that, you know, my friend Dr. Buttrick was, I think, might be in that same realm, possibly. Not just him, but he represents many educated people out there who still think that. And I think that my point is that's the divide that after 4 years or more, 5 years of Trump getting involved, that we still have this lack of understanding. You don't have to agree with Trump, but not understand the
movement.
No,
you're just a bunch of uppity deplorables. You know, thinking you got a say and such. You're not allowed. You uppity deplorables. This is what we're dealing with. You know, I'm tired of even playing the game. I'm not playing their game anymore. You know, we're dealing, you know, with general public opinion and a bunch of stuff I keep going on about. But it's so give me the timeline of what's left to do. What are we looking at here? We're 17th of December.
So,
tomorrow something happens, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, we have a bunch of things. Yeah. There's so many things happening in kind of like, and the problem too is the media won't cover these sorts of things. You can't talk about this stuff on YouTube. They ban you. So it's like, this is.
Hell, that is the story. All right, we're going into break. I won't be able to hear you. So we got, and this is one thing. We got three more segments. Whatever Frank wants to say, he got to say it because we're not able to record it. Just making the network feed. So you got to say it. Say it. Well, in the next segment, Dr. Frank will. I'm sure. We'll be right back.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Ernest Hancock. With Dr. Frank Tamburi and Bob Anderson sitting there taking it all in. Yeah, whatever. So what we want to get to now is there's Mike Pence, you know, has a role as because he's the – I guess president of the Senate, you know, he's the head, you know, break a tie kind of, you know, when it happens. And I guess as like Secretary of State, If you're Secretary of State of a state, you're the one that certifies the election. Well, what happens when you don't sign it? And that was the big threat that I made. I go, you know, without a manual validation, without me knowing, I ain't signing squat. You might as well not elect me, because, man, ain't going to be an election after me unless you get, you know, that kind of thing. So here we have Mike Pence. You know, it's January 6th. He's going to, sign something or not sign something. And we're going to see if he, you know, turn around Trump and you get a knife. And it's like, et tu, Brutus? I mean, you ought, or is he going to, you know, hold hard? Because I'm like, you know, I was very disappointed in 8 and 12 when Dr. Ron Paul, that promised he was going to go through the convention, allow at least first round of voting, and they sold out. And, you know, and Dr. Paul, if he could be chairman of the committee that oversaw the Federal Reserve, okay, that's the deal. Well, then they took the Federal Reserve chairman out from under that committee. Yeah, you're chairman of nobody. Ha-ha! Yeah, how'd that work out? I don't trust these sons of bitches. Not one little bitty, teeny-weeny bitty bit. So I'm going, all right, so what's going to happen? You know, Pence has what power, and what's he going to do with it? What can we look forward to?
All right. So at the end of the day, guys, this is not over. And before it's half of you go, well, geez, you know, it just seems like a bait and switch again. Like, oh, there's this court case and this court case, and things keep falling apart. Two points. The first is, we'll discuss this, but it doesn't end until January 6th. That is when the Senate meets and the House, I believe, and they all vote. The Senate, Mike Pence counts all the votes. It's the certification happened, but Pence actually is the one that says, okay, I'm counting. 1, 2, 3, all right. Well, Biden wins or doesn't win, whatever. And then it's all done. Now, normally all this is a formality, and you know, CNN, whatever, calls it on election night and everyone goes back to sleep. But that is actually how this works. So therefore, Mike Pence, or the vice president, their job is to certify the election. And the point is, he doesn't have to. He could say, I'm not going to certify it. Now, could he just do it for no reason? Yeah, he could. He could just say, you know, I just don't like it because it's raining outside. I'm not going to certify it. I guess technically he could. No one's going to do that. But what's going on is everyone's trying to get the – Ernie, try not to make as much noise, buddy. You're making a lot of noise. What's going on is people are trying to get enough information to build up so that Pence, if he doesn't certify, you can make the case why he's not, right? Because you're not just, you know, not Ernie.
I'm hearing. Go.
Whatever noise is going on, man, I can't hear myself. It's a lot of noise going through. So anyway, so he's trying to certify this thing, or not certify. So the thing is what grounds would he have not to certify? Well, that's what is going on with all of the Voter Integrity Project, which just was putting out a lot of information. Proving, if you actually check them out, and they're like a, you know, the third party, supposedly unbiased, blah blah blah, organization that everyone is kind of reaching to see, are you seeing voter fraud or not? If you actually cross reference what they're finding, there is plenty of voter let's just say integrity problems, and it keeps coming out more and more. And so this is what's finally leading to, of course, the dueling electors coming out, and then Representative Mo Brooks. Well, let me back up for a second. In order to challenge the election, in order to challenge it, to say, Mr. Vice President, we do not want you to certify the election because we want to challenge it. And this is a key part I didn't tell you, Ernie, is that you need a person from each house, I'm sorry, from each part of Congress to object to the certification. So you need one senator to object and one House member to object. And if you have one person from each to object, that is grounds for Mike Pence himself or the vice president to say, okay, we have two people from each part of Congress having a problem, and now we have to discuss. Now, what that discussion is, I think by law, or maybe it's a protocol, I'm not sure on this, but it usually is about 2 hours. So if one person from each part of that Congress objects, then you have to debate it or discuss it for at least 2 hours. Now, I know, you know, Ernie, already you're like, who gives a crap? All right, whatever, you know. But I already know. But the point is that allows a break and allows other representatives who maybe have been cowardly this entire time, who just want to see or have been building up the evidence to see, other people can then jump in. And as we know, human nature, many times people are just cowards. And you need a leader or a few people to stand up first, and then everybody else piles in. Because that is the moment, sink or swim. And even neocons, I think, are starting to realize that, you know, there's no going back to the other world. And if you're seeing the voter fraud that we're seeing now, including Georgia right now, there's 100 just recently, another million, I'm sorry, 1.6 million mail-in ballots just showed up recently in Georgia, over and above what we've ever seen before.
They just create more paper.
Exactly, exactly. So 1.6 million of these mail-in ballots have shown up in Georgia for the Senate race.
And look at them. Yeah. We went past the line here. They're certified. We put them through the machine. It's done. Sucks to be you.
So what you have is, what I'm getting to is, you have even neocons, even the Mitch McConnell types, who might think that they just want to go back to getting money from the deep state and the military friends. But there's no way that they're ever going to be in power again if this sort of thing is not stopped. I mean, right now in the Senate, I'm not trying to get off too many points here, but the Georgia people are having a riot in that state. They're saying they're trying to force the Senate runoff to be postponed until February, so that therefore they can figure out any voter fraud or mail-in ballot irregularities. Because clearly, all this evidence that's coming out has not been proven, not been even to be able to be demonstrated in the courts because standing issues. But there's huge, huge, you know, distrust in the system, and now they're seeing this huge election on a nation election, essentially, which is what the Georgia is. And so all of this is building to a crescendo where even neocons are getting stuck in the middle of this. They have to choose. You know, these neocons remind me of Anakin Skywalker at the end of Revenge of the Sith. You know, and you've got the Palpatine and Mace Windu going at it, and they're like, Anakin, you have to choose. And he looks back and forth, and he's got to choose, right? I mean, that's where these neocons, these evil neocons, are being forced to do it. And this January 6th is the moment where everyone's going to have to choose. And so Rand Paul, to his credit, Rand Paul has now basically given overtures that he might be the senator that stands up and says, I mean, he's basically saying that he's going to, that he'll be challenging the election. And you have three House members, including Mo Brooks, representative. He'll be challenging from the House. So we know it will be challenged January 6th.
See, this is what I'm saying. We don't know squat. This is all stand down, stand by, wait, and we'll one more time into the one, wait, and one more, and they, them, those, and somebody else, and they'll fix it for you. And I'm going, I'm not waiting anymore. I don't care. I'm tired of being disappointed all the time. You know what? I can't be disappointed. I don't expect them to do squat anyway. Oh, we traded out. Oh, we got a little upgrade here. We got Rand didn't learn from what they did to his father and him negotiating with these guys. If Trump hasn't figured it out by now that these guys cannot be trusted, there is no negotiation. I'm like, they're what?
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Ernest Hancock Show. And the Trump Report with Dr. Frank Tambury. Now, I'm giving him crap because I'm like, you know, I'm not digging it. You know, I'm not wanting to be in the situation to where I'm, you know, waiting on somebody else. Somebody else is going to do something. Somebody else, and it's all done. We're just spectators to a participant sport of freedom, you know. And you know, but Frank, he's just reporting. He's not taking a side. He's like, hey, you know, I'm not counting on what. All right, defend yourself, man. Go.
Yeah, Ernie, and I have another argument off the air. It's just, sometimes those are even more fun, I think, for you listeners. But anyway. You know, Ernie's like, oh, what the heck? I'm not going to wait and trust these people and blah, blah, blah. And yeah, I agree with him. I mean, I was telling Ernie with when Ron Paul, you know, I felt a little backstabbed with that. They begged me for money, you know, and I gave a good chunk of change right towards the end when Ron Paul's campaign.
Yeah, we're going to take it through the convention, take it, give us more money. We're going to take it, pinky swear, take it, give us money, you do it in Naples.
Pinky swear, we actually need it. And I gave the money. My family would never donate to politicians. They donated, and then it was a week later, and he pulled out. And I, you know, it's just something, and I still love Dr. Paul, but it's just, it happens, I get it, and I don't trust the system, blah, blah, blah. So I'm not... I'm not that obtuse with everything, but points are that half my job here is to try to report what is going on as much as I know, because we're in an information overload, information war right now. But what is the strategy going forward?
I don't know.
I'm telling you, when you ask Ernie, well, I hope Trump takes it to the bitter end. This is how you take it to the bitter end, at least as far as, I know you don't like this part, as far as the procedural and how the system's set up. Now, to you, the bitter end goes beyond. You don't give a crap about the rules and regulations certification. That just makes you get – you just kind of vomit with those words.
No,
but to you,
it's the larger issue.
To you, it's the larger issue. It's the culture war. It's the actual – it's the freedoms, being able to just turn your back on all that system. And that's what hopefully Trump can – will help people do that in a different way. And, of course, to your point of view, you don't even need Trump. The people do it themselves. I get it. But this is what – this is where this is being pushed to the end. And as he's doing it, as much as you don't like the system at all, by showing the system in each step of the way, it's like you're just getting dragged over needles for people. People are seeing how broken the system is when they've never really looked at the system. They've never understood the system. Most people never read the Constitution. They don't even know that there was a process. They just thought they vote. On election night, MTV Rock the Vote tells you Hollywood celebrity tells you to vote for. You vote, and then you go back to sleep, and you wake up in the morning, CNN tells you who won, and then life goes on, and you don't even think about any of this stuff unless you happen to be a political wonk and a geek. And so this is now you're seeing the process. Now, the other thing that's happening is that many Americans, I think, are really going through a cognitive dissonance. I've said that I think the left was going to go through that if Trump legitimately won, and the nationalist populist uprising, I think, is really coming. But regardless, I think many of us are going through it, to be fair. You know, as I said, 4 years ago, how many people were still believing CNN or maybe even Fox News? But now you've got people not believing anything within 4 years. Now, people in this audience, this is like, you know, we've been doing this 20, 30 years. We've known this a long time. But the average person around us are all waking up to this. And it's a lot, guys. You have to at least be, I think, respectful and understanding of people, even though they've given you crap all this time. And it's very, you know, tempting to say, well, where the frick have you been all this time? I get that. Trust me. I feel the same way after, you know, quite a bit. But that's where I think people are coming from. And since this election, to then doubt the voting system at all. I mean, it's one thing to start doubting the media and then doubting Fox News, but to be doubting the entire voting system, just, and then to start seeing the courts turn their back. And if you have a complaint, and we sit and we're watching illegals come in this country, then they're voting, then we're having mail-in ballots and no signatures, and the average person thinks this should be easily remedied. And you just, you know, if you want, you just go to the police department and say, I've got voter fraud to report. You know, it's all taken care of. And here you're seeing the entire process where no one is taking it up, right? The courts won't take it up. They're saying standing, and people are like, what the heck is standing? What do you mean standing? And we've got voter fraud. Just look into it. We're not going to look into it. Then you turn to the media, and the media doesn't want to look into it, and then they're lying about everything. And so people are starting to feel really boxed in just as far as just being a citizen. Like, you really have no power. I think people are almost impotent. They're feeling like, which I know, Ernie, is where they make the transition into the Freedom's Phoenix world. Okay, that's where you're just waiting there with a catcher's mitt going, here I am. I've been waiting all this time, people, and I know. But you and I both know that people have to get to this broken level to realize, as you famously say, it just doesn't matter. And people have to see it, though. They have to see how it doesn't work first. It's kind of like, not to be too an aside, but when you do magic tricks, you know, if you notice when you do a magic trick, first the magician shows you what you expect. You know, the rabbit goes, I mean, like, you know, I don't know, you show an empty hat, and then you show the empty hat again, and then all of a sudden the rabbit comes out, right? So you have to show the normal first of what to expect. And then when the abnormal happens, that's when you get everyone's attention. That's how you have to do it. It's how jokes are done. You know, it's how magic is done. And the same thing here. People have to see how the process is supposed to operate. And then when it doesn't work that way, that's the cognitive dissonance going, well, what the heck? What do we? It's like, where did the rabbit come from? Like, what do you mean Supreme Court's not going to take a look at this when you've got all these affidavits and all this evidence and the media says there's no evidence? And you just start wrapping your head and it explodes. So that what's been happening, though, with all of that building up is the average person is, I think, awakening to this and giving support, calling their senators, calling. I'm telling you, the phone lines have been breaking down with these representatives and neocons, Mitch McConnell, Doug Ducey, all of them. They're all exploding. Now, I know you don't care about that, but this is a form of activism of where I think whether they listen to it or not doesn't matter. I think enough representatives in the system is realizing that there could be some serious challenges for people to stand up on the certification issue. Now, we'll talk about this after the break, a big, big point here, which I've been saving, and we'll talk about it, and that is, will they certify if given the opportunity? Or I'm sorry, will they not certify if given the opportunity with the challenges, you know, with the, between the dueling electors that are all being set up, the state legislatures?
Will who certify, Pence?
Exactly. In other words, will Pence not certify if given the chance? But he has to be given the chance technically and politically first, which is what I said, when you've got a House and a senator both challenge it, then it goes to open debate, and then you have the opportunity for other legislatures and all to jump in and say, me too. Yeah, I think, you know. Now, they've had months now, a month and a half, which is not a lot of time, actually, for people to be learning very quickly how broken the system is. Like I said, it's a lot for people to process when just November 4th, whatever it was, people thought that the voting system worked. I know, hold in your vomit. I'm just saying that most people thought that was the case, and within only a month, their head is spinning about how broken this thing is, and what do you do, and who do you talk with, and telling your legislatures, and are you going to support the neocons in Georgia? All happening so quick, and it's going to come to a breaking point, I think, in January, and Pence, I'm sure, has already talked to the president, or will, about, do you want this? Because keep in mind, if Pence does not certify, and then it goes to the House of Representatives, then each House represented, I'm sorry, each state gets to nominate or send a delegate in order to represent them. So that means there's more Republican states than Democrats. Most of this audience already knows this. And then Trump would win if technically Pence does not certify, right? But the thing is, that means Trump is still president. The question is, does Trump really want to do that? Because if you think they hated him then, if you think they rioted it before, you ain't seen nothing as far as what the attack will be. Will he want to do it? And I think if given that opportunity, and maybe if not given the opportunity completely, however this plays out, I'm starting to really more and more think that he will, that he will take this.
If he's going to do it, do it! Quit namby-pambying this thing. We are under Marxist attack. This is a country going down, and we have these safeguards for this kind of reason. And better you.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
And give us the whole shooting match at the end. This last segment, go, man.
All right. Well, yeah, explain it all. I wish I could. I mean, I don't think anyone can explain all that's going on. So, look, we all know the deep state's trying to get back in. We know, the media is part of this, blah, blah, blah. But I'm talking about, in many ways, our family and friends. I mean, especially with the holidays, it's hard to even – I mean, the country's breaking apart here. At the end of the day, I blame them because this country, if the Democrats really do – want to move on and heal the country, blah, blah, blah. There's only one thing that they have to do, and that is they need to take the concerns of half this country of voter fraud or problems and work state by state and figure this out. Basically have representatives of each side plus maybe a third party, however you want to do it. I don't care, but that's all they had to do, because if they truly want to unify this country – this country is about to go into civil war here, about to pop. And if they really believe that they won this election, then they have nothing to lose. They have everything to gain. Because you sit there and you take their concerns seriously. You respect their concerns. You have every single vote counted. If it takes another 3 months, you stink and do it. And then you say, you see, there was no hanky-panky, and now we can move on. And then you shut down this entire conspiracy theory, Trump machine, Freedom's Phoenix, Ernie's crazy. All of this, you shut it down immediately. And the fact that they won't is the only argument you have to make to your friends and family, period, done, mic drop. That's it. That's all they need to do. And by not doing it, they are begging for more conspiracy theories. They are begging for more of the stuff to come out. And this country should be completely split. So that's what's happening. So now the question is, if you're Donald Trump, and I've got a lot of thought this myself, you know, I mean, forgetting procedural, because Ernie doesn't trust it, and it doesn't mean I trust it. Well, Mike Pence, he might just say, you know what, I want to run for president myself someday, which I don't think he does. And he says, you know, I don't want to be in bad graces with these evil sociopaths, so I'm just going to certify and welcome Joe Biden, and we can all move on. So, I mean, he might do that. Who knows? The question is, will President Trump leave office, which is what the left has always been blaming him not to do. I mean, that he would do.
March. I mean, it used to be, you know, a lot later than it is now. So
forgetting the official route, which I discussed earlier, and you know, whatever credibility we have for that. If you're Donald Trump, and you really believe this an existential threat to this country, and you say, you know, you said on your State of the Union, this country will never become socialist, and I'm never going to allow voter fraud to take this country to steal an election, and you're someone that deals with the mob, and you've dealt with really hard-hitting people before, and you're president, and you're seeing the ground game, you're seeing stuff that none of us can see, I mean, I guess what I'm saying is, like, what would he do? I mean, will he possibly get to the point where righteousness trumps, you know, all of the process that seems to be blatant in front of everybody not working? You see, that's kind of what I think is going on. I mean, at the end of the day, it comes down to confidence levels of people. And the rules and regulations is what everyone followed before that gave them the confidence. But when the rules and regulations don't matter anymore, and the average person, not you, Ernie, not this audience, but the average person.
Yeah, you know what he's he's got to gauge whether the military will support him. Because bottom line comes down, if he sits there and goes, yes, I'm not going to go because this is the reason why, and my executive order and all the other stuff that they're putting out that he could possibly do, if he doesn't have the fact that the military's not going to march in there, put handcuffs on him, and drag him out of office, they're actually going to back him up.
Exactly.
Because it comes down to is all political power comes from the barrel of a gun. And until people understand that, eventually what is going to happen, that's they got to understand that.
Yeah, what's Kamala doing? Kamala's going, we're taking all your guns and get over it.
Because she understands where political power comes from.
No, it's amazing. And that's a whole other show about Kamala, how much I called that one. They were begging for her. And Hillary Clinton, remember, she was the one defending Clinton. Clinton endorsed Kamala from before the first debate. It's all about Kamala. It's all about her. And the minute that Biden supposedly won, that is when the media allowed the Hunter Biden stuff to come out. They're already setting him up to fail to put her in, and she is basically the pawn of Hillary Clinton. It is astounding when you understand the real deep state. This whole thing is getting the Clintons back in through the puppet of Kamala, but that's a whole other story.
Barr? Where's Barr in all this? I mean, he's gone now. I mean, what they're counting on him, and did Trump set him up like he did everybody else, this part of the plan, or did he trust the process or individuals and kind of, you know?
I don't know. I mean, the Barr thing's it's very possible he was threatened. I mean, a lot of people think his family, maybe he was just threatened, like just seeing how deep this thing is, and he kept the Hunter Biden thing secret. So I don't know. But I'll tell you, when it comes to this thing with Trump, one of the arguments is, well, you know, he might just decide to run again in 4 years. And that's a very good point. If he bows out now and doesn't try to, quote, fall into the trap, the stereotype of a dictator and not leave, then he can come back in 4 years and rebuild the party, which is what he would need to do. But I mean,
they supported Trump being in there. The media kind of, okay, he'll be an easy guy to beat. Well, he wasn't that easy anymore. You know,
No, exactly. And I think when they realize that he's not just a figurehead that'll go away and that there's a movement and a lot more other issues, I think Trump realizes this point, and here's the term I guess I'm going to coin on your show, is that he, when you sit back, if I was him looking in the mirror, I'd say, you know, I am at peak Trump. Peak Trump. It's sort of like, it's like you maxed out your energy bar on Mortal Kombat or Street Fighter, you know, like you're maxed out and now you push the KO button because you got it all there. To do anything less, you're just going to diminish and lose everything because they, as you know yourself, Ernie, they're not going to allow him to have a part two. If nothing else, who knows? Donald Trump might get very depressed and hang himself because, you know, no, I mean, he might run into that.
There will be no political party in the GOP to rebuild if they lose the Senate in Georgia. It's done.
Oh, exactly. No, exactly. In many ways, they need to be destroyed. And in the neocons, they need to be just eviscerated. And that's the whole other part. We need, in many ways, I almost want the socialists to take over. Let them, give them a Senate. Give them
police
everything.
State so we can leave.
Yeah, just let the whole thing out. And that way, if people who have been the milquetoast fence sitters right now, the people who just think it's our job to be the activists, you know what? The rest of you people need to get involved, all right? People don't want to put a bumper sticker up or afraid of your Facebook friends or whatever. That's the type. People have to realize what they're really up against and just give it to them. Just say, fine, here you go. So give me a call when you guys are ready to take arms. But the thing is that's where we are now with Trump. I'm thinking, where would he go? They're going to stop him. Twitter's already said that once he's not in the Oval Office, right after Biden's sworn in, according to them, you know, he doesn't have any Twitter protection, which I know sounds funny. He should have left Twitter a long time ago. But the thing is, you know, he's completely banned. He'll be gone from every social media immediately. I know there's other media networks, but the thing is, we're scattered right now. We're scattered to the wind, and there's not a unification. So Trump knows this. He knows that he's not going to have a focus to get the message out. It's going to be much more uphill battle. Plus, like you said, right now he's got the military backing him. He has the blue, you know, that he supported during all the riots. And if you're Trump, in my opinion, if you're the president and you know for a fact, and I mean this, you know for a fact that you won that election with millions of votes over what you did last time and beyond even your pathetic opponent, if you know for a fact that you really did win. Now, I can't say that because I don't have all the numbers, but he's seeing it. If you know that, then that means you know for a fact that the majority of people are backing you. And that, I think, at the end of the day, if it's a confidence issue, maybe that is what, you know, you add all this stuff together, you know, and at the fact that that they might take you out. I mean, they're already talking about arresting him and all sorts of plays. So I don't know. It's like, and plus his whole family is at risk. I mean, we see what happened with the Bolsheviks and things like that. I mean, what happens?
We have seen this happen around the world. Around the world, there has been just exactly this type of coup with election process. I remember when Yugoslavia broke up and you had Croatia, Serbia, all that kind of stuff. They have elections. They go, you know, it didn't get the result that we wanted, and a lot of people didn't vote, so we're just going to do a do-over. And I'm like, what? You know, they'll do any and everything they can because they have a process to it. And these psychopaths do not have any hesitation to do whatever it takes because it's in their nature. They don't care what you do. Yeah, but it's illegitimate because they go, yeah, who's sitting in the Oval Office? Come on. So this is, I'm American, man. We, you know, Americans got to be American. And Trump, he pulls on this and they don't take it to the end. What the hell good are you? You know, you're there to defend and try it, and I've seen it. You know, people pull before, and I'm hoping that, you know, Rand doesn't do what his father did, you know?